On today's episode of The Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors, we're joined by Bruno Reagan, the host of The Afternoon Stretch from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on Nashville's Sports Radio WNSR 560 on the FM dial. You can tune into him alongside Zach Wilson every weekday to talk sports, but we discuss NIL and the possibilities within Vanderbilt's athletic department, especially with Scottie Pippen Jr. coming back. We also dive a little bit deeper into the possibilities of the NIL and how it might impact college athletics as a whole. Stay tuned. We've got a special episode coming right up here on The Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Let's ride.
You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who believe black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome back into The Door Report. It is episode 95. It is July 19th, 2021. We are, as always, presented by the great folks at Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Will, we're back. It's been almost a week. Hopefully, we don't take this much time in between every episode during the dog days, but that might just be how it goes. We've got a little bit to talk about on the recruiting front, a little bit on the SEC media days. But today, Will, it's going to be all NIL talk, and we've got a very intriguing guest coming on. I know you had a lot of fun with him.
Yeah, Bruno is always fun to have on because he always has some very takes that are unfiltered takes. He has some very unfiltered takes, and he certainly had those during our interview, and we had a really great discussion about the NIL and everything that could bring, and getting the perspective of a former Vanderbilt student athlete pretty recently, I think, was pretty awesome, and people definitely want to hear his thoughts on the whole deal and everything going on currently in college athletics.
Yeah, talk about an opinionated person. He will ramble on and on, but he's a great guy to have on. That's what he provides to podcasts like this, so it's always great to have him on. We will be joined by him later. But before we get to the usual breaking news, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @door_report and Instagram @door.report. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, go give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes. It's now time for breaking news.
Today's breaking news is brought to you by the Recycling Dudes. You may ask, who are the Recycling Dudes? Well, they're brothers Graydon and Chapman and their dad. Drew Smith, who is a Metro Nashville firefighter living in West Mead. The Recycling Dudes recognize the need for a service that would take glass to the recycling for busy homeowners who care about our environment. They pick up your glass, separate it, and take it to be recycled. They offer monthly service as well as one-time party pickup, starting as low as $10 per month. All you have to do is sign up on their website at recyclingdudes.com.
All right, Will, we've got another kind of a straggler commitment, but he's not a straggler in terms of the way he plays. He is Darren Agoo. He is the 17th commit in the class of 2022. He was originally committed to Notre Dame, but he decommitted last Sunday. And here's what, before we dive into him, here's what recruiting analyst Tom Lemming said of Agoo after he committed to Notre Dame. The 6'6", 225-pounder from Raven Gap, Georgia, chose the Irish over offers from Alabama, Auburn, Penn State, and more. It's a fantastically strong list of schools. While he's only a 3-star right now, many recruiting insiders are expecting a huge jump in the rankings at some point for him. Agoo hasn't played football very long at all and is still a little raw, but he's also extremely athletic. He's got good size, and he originally hails from England via Ireland, and their football ain't this football. So I thought that was a pretty fun quote there from Tom Lemming, a recruiting analyst. But Will, I mean, this guy looks like a beast. He's 6'6", 225. He can obviously get a little bit thicker. I'm sure Coach Lee would love to get him up to the 235, 240 range as an edge rusher there. How many different guys of this mold have they had in this class? I know Linus Zunk was also from Raven Gap there in Georgia, a guy like him. But Will, looking at this guy and just looking at his body, he looks like an SEC defensive player.
You stole my thunder there, Billy. I was going to bring up Linus Zonk, hailing from Germany, I believe. So
I actually wrote that on the script, though. So I'll
you've got two bookend defensive ends there. 6'6 on both sides, 235 for Zonk, 225 for Agu, decommitting from Notre Dame. And it's another guy that is going to boost them up those rankings that Vanderbilt fans are flaunting right now. And understandably, they haven't seen rankings like that since maybe Mason had one of those classes early on, but pretty mostly much since the Franklin era of these numbers. So, but I do want to caution Vanderbilt fans, as this recruiting process goes on, Vanderbilt is going to fall further and further and further down the rankings.
Well, come on.
Because we have 18 total commits, and the teams all around Vanderbilt have a lot less commits and almost have the same recruiting score that 24/7 uses to calculate. But our Vanderbilt's average score is only an 85, which is not.
So you're saying Vanderbilt right now is they're up there because of the amount of commits.
Vanderbilt does not have a top 30 recruiting class right now. They have about the number 55 recruiting class in the country by average recruit. So I just want Vanderbilt fans to understand
the way they do them on 24/7.
Yes, that I'm not saying this class is bad. I'm not saying anything of that nature. This is a really good class. Has a lot of potential, great body types, and you talked about climbing up the rankings for Agu possibly in the future.
Yeah.
One guy that in this class is climbing up the rankings is Caleb Coley, who actually is a top 200 rated player on ESPN right now, an ESPN 300 player, 4-star, and he did receive a little bit of a bump on 24/7 there, up to about, I believe, the 480th best player overall in the country. So just keep in mind that just because you're going to see Vanderbilt slide down the recruiting rankings, you don't have to panic. It's okay. We're going to be okay. Yes, calm down. They're going to fall. Nothing is going to fall. Nothing is happening. When you see Vanderbilt in 2 months, they're going to be ranked in the 40s. Nothing has happened to the class. It's the same class. So I just want to get ahead of this inevitable storyline of Vanderbilt's recruiting class rankings plummeting down the leaderboard.
Commodore Clark Lee will still head the ship. The ship has not sunk yet, and the ship is not sinking anytime soon. But I agree with you, Will. This class will, like you usually see, I mean, we've seen this before with classes, especially in the Mason years, where they would be up in the top 25 early. They would have some steam and then quit, you know, slowly, as you talked about, fall to the bottom. But we'll see. You know, we'll have to see if Coach Lee can continue, because if he keeps getting guys of the Agu mold, they may not fall as far as back. So. So we'll see. He's the highest rated prospect currently in their class. Vandy does have the 9th ranked class in the SEC, 20th in nation. But again, it's really early, and we'll have to see what else Coach Lee can get done. Will, we do have SEC media days this week, though. Really interesting that Vanderbilt, you know, not Vanderbilt, Coach Lee has decided to have two linemen. You got Davion Davis, who was a guy that played really well last year. Didn't have, didn't play maybe as much as he wanted to, but now he's going to be stepping into a larger role. And you also have Bradley Ashmore, a sophomore offensive lineman who played a lot last year. He might have started most of the games. But, you know, I'm assuming this kid has a great work ethic and is a great communicator, and Coach Lee has trust in him. And that's why I think he chose Bradley Ashmore. I'm not, you know, who knows why he really did, but you typically don't see head coaches in the SEC choosing two linemen, especially, you know, at a school like Vanderbilt. And we'll see what these guys are going to be coming out with and saying. Who knows what Coach Lee is going to tell them to say and speak on. But Will, I think, I mean, there's not a huge deal being made of this. I'm not trying to make it a bigger deal than it is, but it's something you don't usually see. Would you agree?
Yeah, Billy, we were talking about this before the podcast began, and I gave you my hot take on these two choices for the SEC media days. And I could tell you were kind of trying not to steal my thunder there, but this is obviously not any inside story. This is just my opinion. I think Clark Lee, obviously from this class, he's been recruiting three things. Or four things, I will say. Number one is secondary. Number two is speed. Yep. Number three and four are size on either side of the offensive and defensive lines. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is something he's going to be able to use in recruiting pitches on top of NIL. and say, look, you come to Vanderbilt here, there's all these opportunities for you as far as endorsements are concerned, and everything you can generate with revenue regarding that. And also here at Vanderbilt, we're going to put you front and center in the spotlight as an offensive and defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. And he's going to point to, look at who these other SEC teams brought. They certainly didn't bring the beef up front. So come to Vanderbilt, get your face in front of the cameras, and let's go make you some money on the NIL.
I love it. I mean, I think you're spot on. I can't believe I didn't think of it. And Will, I'm not saying this is like exactly what he's thinking. We could be totally wrong here, but I think it's a great observation, because what has been the main problem with Vanderbilt football the past, I mean, for as long as we can remember, I think when our dads were watching Vanderbilt football, this is still a problem. The trenches. Vanderbilt has never been able to play well enough in the trenches to play and compete against Georgia, Florida, A&M. I'm not going to say Alabama, you know, LSU, Clemson, mm-hmm. but those second tier of SEC teams that they just haven't competed with. And so I agree with you, Will. I think part of that, that could be part of it. But again, that's what Vanderbilt has to look at when they're looking at recruits as well as players on their team right now. Because how are you gonna reward these guys? How are you gonna reward the guys in the trenches? Because you know Clark Lee is smart enough to realize that and say, hey, let's bring two linemen in to SEC Media Days and see what everybody thinks about that. And I'm not saying these guys are going to shock the world at SEC Media Days or anything, but I know Coach Lee will, and I think Coach Lee is going to have a terrific performance this week at SEC Media Days. And Will, I'm excited to see how he carries himself. And I'm not saying he hasn't been one to be nervous during these types of interviews. And you know, this stuff is right up his alley. So I'd be willing to bet he has the longest appearance at the podium. Just because, I mean, how much of a philosophical thinker and type of guy he is, I'd be willing to bet he's the longest up there.
Yeah, and I didn't want it to make it sound like that's the only reason these guys are going to SEC Media Days, because of a recruiting tool. But I'm saying it's probably, there's no way he hasn't thought of that and that staff hasn't thought of that as, you know, a happy little accident maybe on the side. We bring in these linemen that have earned it, obviously, through their work. They can present themselves well, answer questions well, handle pressure. And also, it can benefit you on the recruiting trail. Right, but right. I think this will be an introduction to Clark Lee for the rest of the SEC and the rest of college football, because kind of everything going on with COVID, when Derek Mason got let go and Lee got brought in, it really didn't receive that much attention. And it's Vanderbilt, so it's going to receive the least amount of attention of any head coaching change that you're going to see. But it was still, even for Vanderbilt, very little attention. You haven't seen a lot of Clark Lee doing these SEC network spots. He has been on some, but not as much as you would expect. And I was very excited with the Clark Lee hire. I wasn't the one that was jumping over the moon, ready to crown him the savior of Vanderbilt football. But hearing him speak, hearing the passion he has about being at Vanderbilt and playing there and his family being there and the family atmosphere they've created and the ways they're trying to innovate and change the culture of Vanderbilt football, I think he is going to be able to get some really, really good sound bites and video bits to post all over social media. And I think a lot of those are going to get a lot of attention from people that wouldn't even know who Clark Lee is if you said that around them, but they consider themselves SEC football fans.
I agree. I think the door report is gonna be right up our alley, especially with Coach Lee and you know, all the bits we love to put post on him. But Will, it's gonna be interesting. We got SEC Media Days. Vandy will go Wednesday. Do we have a time? I know, I'm not sure what number Coach Lee is there. I assume he's the third coach. But again, they're mostly in the afternoon. So afternoon, you know, from 1 to 5 o'clock, I'd be guessing that's where you can see Clark Lee. So just tune into the SEC network there. Bradley Ashmore.
Yeah, it'll be Wednesday. Clark Lee is Wednesday at 11:30 a.m. There you go.
Wow, he's actually just found in the morning. It. So 11:30 a.m. I was wrong. Coach Lee will step up to the podium. And Bradley Ashmore, an offensive lineman, and Davion Davis will also be there. So maybe the next step for us is to get down there, huh? That'd be quite the experience. So Will, let's go ahead and roll on here to our final topic of the first segment, and it's a pretty beefy one. It is the NIL, and basically, for if you're listening to this podcast and you are unsure of what's going on, and I mean, I may agree with you on some of those things, but because it seems a lot is unclear. But to dumb it down some sorts, basically, if a college athlete lives in a state where legislation has been passed, they can profit from their name, image, and likeness according to state law, as that's the basic way of putting it. But if the college athlete doesn't live in a state with an NIL law on the books, the individual school themselves must come up with a policy for athletes to follow. And Will, I'm sure you've seen this. According to ESPN, the NCAA's guidelines on this are few. Basically, don't allow boosters to pay athletes and don't let endorsement deals influence recruiting. And that's, I mean, I don't think anybody was really doing much of that anyway. I mean, I'm sure there was a little bit of that going on, but I'm not sure, you know, that that'll play a large impact on this. But Will, and there's so much going on here. What I want to do basically is yes, I know we have both of our takes on this, but dive into what Vanderbilt and what this means, because yes, we are a Vanderbilt podcast, and what this means for them in the city of Nashville. Well, first off, I think this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I think this that's staring Vanderbilt in the face. And I think, Will, from, you know, as long as we've been alive, I don't think Vanderbilt has achieved their potential on the marketing side of things. I think they could do a better job of marketing the city of Nashville to its fans, to other fans who aren't necessarily fans of Vanderbilt, but live in Nashville and need a team to root for, and someone who, a recruit, say, hey, come to Nashville. And this isn't necessarily Vanderbilt's not going to be benefiting mostly on the NIL, but these players are. So for Vanderbilt, I think these coaches, the administrators, they need to help the players help them. They need to give these players, allow them the opportunities to market themselves and benefit off of their likeness in Nashville. I mean, it's the it city right now. We both know it. We've been down there. It's quite the time. And market that to players. That's where I'm at, Will. I know you've got a lot on it. But in Vanderbilt and Nashville, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, the NIL, I think, is it hasn't been – there's multiple things I have issues with. And not NIL. I'm a huge fan of players being able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. But as far as coverage is concerned about this is, number one, people don't understand it. And in general, the media, not exactly the most financially intelligent, and not in general, in my opinion, especially sports media, but all across, generally not the most brilliant people on the planet, especially a lot of local sports talk, a lot of local bloggers. And, you know, I don't want to, we're kind of casting shade on ourselves here, but but
not us.
This is not being covered very well because people don't understand it, and they don't, and they just hear NIL, financial literacy, and they just cover their eyes and are like, this is great, call it. And but it presents a lot of problems, and it presents a lot of good things. And the NCAA is woefully unprepared for it. It's been brewing since 2014 with the lawsuit relating to the name, image, and likeness and licensing usage in the EA Sports video game, which is hopefully going to be coming back in 2023. We'll get to that a little bit later. But the NCAA just released, don't use it in recruiting and boosters can't pay players. And you're like, what do you mean don't use it in recruiting? Okay, so we don't go in and pitch it, but these kids aren't idiots. Their families aren't idiots. They can tell that if they go to this certain place, like Miami, for example, who has a local business owner offering, I'll say it, $6,000 to each. Yeah, something like that. I don't know how to phrase it, but offering $6,000 to each scholarship player at Miami to endorse over there. So that is what we're going to see a little bit more of, but
not really
in general, Vanderbilt, you'll see some unique opportunities because they are in such a big city. There's so many opportunities for, especially if Vanderbilt's making a college World Series run like they were, with so many businesses around here, so much tourism. I can see Vanderbilt uniquely being able to profit off of it. But the good of it is they're going to be able to allow these athletes to make choices. And that is kind of the gist of it. And we'll get more detailed into this in a second. But Billy, I think you've got something to say here.
I think, Will, so what I'd like to compare to, and I think at least in the last decade, how Tennessee has marketed as because I haven't seen Tennessee market Nashville as much. I know they do somewhat, And because it's Nashville's obviously in the state of Tennessee, but what can't happen here is, for example, Tennessee in Knoxville, Vanderbilt in Nashville. Vanderbilt cannot let Tennessee take advantage of anything that can happen of these opportunities with the NIL. Vanderbilt has to take the NIL by the horns in Nashville and say, this is our city and we're going to do whatever we want here. And yes, you know, Tennessee may dominate in terms of fan base with more fans in here, but we are going to dominate marketing in Nashville. And that's where I'm at. And NIL will help with this because of players like Scottie Pippen Jr. Throw 5-6 billboards out there with Scottie Pippen Jr. He's coming back, you know, let's run it back. I think I've already seen one of them, but those are the certain type of things. They've done it with the Vandy boys. The baseball team has done, I think, an ideal job of it, because they have a lot of bodies that are very, you know, very beneficial to their program. But football, basketball, and baseball need to all be in sync. And I know that it's a lot easier said than done, but that's where I'm at, Will. And I think for Vanderbilt, they just need to focus on the marketing side. Like we talk about all the time in Nashville at Vanderbilt Stadium, the fans, obviously this season, we're not saying the fans are going to pack the stadium, but what I'm saying is put Vanderbilt football and Coach Lee in the minds of these fans and say, hey, they're here. They're going to do whatever they can. And they're working towards a similar goal. Vandy United, that's what they're doing. And who knows what can happen, but there is a decent amount of bad that can also happen. And I know you definitely are diving into that here soon.
Yeah. So I have it sorted out here, kind of my bullet point notes of the good, the bad, and the stupid. So the good is what we've been talking about here, which is theoretically perfect world. These SEC football players, these Power Five, these college athletes deserve to be paid for the revenue, at least a portion of the eyes they're drawing in. And I think the NCAA's regulations is largely due to them just throwing their hands up in the air and saying we've lost, because at this point, their rulings are so arbitrary and saying don't use it in recruiting. How in the world are you going to regulate that? It's impossible. You couldn't even regulate when any type of financial or monetary benefit to a recruit, and they couldn't manage that. So, but the NIL laws in Tennessee, I'll list one more good before we get into the bad. They did sign into a portion along with other states, which requires universities to, in their first term on campus, have players enrolled in a financial literacy course, which is going to break down how to manage this money they're bringing in. And that's not going to apply to a lot of athletes, but some athletes are going to need that because they're 18-year-old kids. They're coming straight out of high school.
Right.
$100 is a lot to them. And then they're going to be having a car dealership offering.
Yeah, in basketball, the one-and-dones, like schools like Kentucky, and even Noah Shelby and Lee Dort coming in. I mean, who knows? They might be one-and-done. So, I mean, that applies there also.
Yeah. So, and that's good because, you know, that's the good. So we've said our piece. I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of how it, but it's going to end up being regulated. I don't know if it'll be by the NCAA or by individual conferences or exactly how it'll work out. There's a lot up in the air. Now we'll get to the bad. We mentioned about Miami, Lambert offering the Miami football program $560,000, $6,000 per year to each Hurricane player who agrees or opts into that deal. So that, we're going to see some of that. That's not going to be the norm. That's one side that it's a legitimate business. There's no way to audit out that by the NCAA. It just is what it is. It's part of this NIL.
The players don't have to do anything. They're just, they're handed this money, correct?
They're endorsing, in quotations, which that's hard to regulate. Yeah, so you're, as an endorsement, I mean, people sign professional athletes all the time to represent their brand and wear their brand. That's an influencer. And that's basically what you're going to see most of well-known college athletes benefit from is their social media and being a, in quotes, influencer and utilizing these products on their social media pages. The biggest part that's the dumb part of it here is this is not going to have, to the casual fan, any impact in on-field, anything related to that whatsoever. And this is something that I don't hear talked about enough, is talking about that right now Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Penn State, Michigan, go down the list. They're who are competing for the best recruits and winning national championships. We're using football as an example.
Right.
That's not going to change. That's going, they're still recruiting after the five stars. I always use the example of Alabama is not recruiting the same or competing with a guy for the same recruit as Akron. He's not sitting there with an Akron Zips hat next to an Alabama Crimson Tide hat, just really making a decision between the two. I mean, that the bad, it's
they're going to remain the same. Like,
so that is the part I'm not hearing touched on enough by the purists that are, oh, it's going to, you know, hurt amateur collegiate athletics and everything around that. And I'm like, no, it's not. But for us, it's going to give us a lot of interesting things to follow as far as throughout the offseason and the recruiting cycle and different things that these guys are doing. I think it'll make the athletes more accessible while simultaneously making them feel less accessible and more like professional athletes. So that'll be a weird thing to keep an eye on. But I kind of want to hear your negative side of it here, Billy.
No. Okay, so I mean, my negative, I think it might. Let me go good first here. I liked how you touched on making them feel like professional athletes. I remember when Darius Garland and Simi Chateau stepped on campus, and there was a baseball game. It was a rain delay during a baseball game, and they sent the fans to the gym. And these two, I mean, future NBA guys are in there, and Simi Chateau, 6'9", Darius, you know, I mean, I played against him in high school and know what he looks like, but, you know, so you look at those guys and they're larger than life figures. And those are some of the two guys, those are two of the guys that you hadn't really seen at Vanderbilt. So I think there's going to be more of that for players who may not necessarily be that NBA prospect. Like, I think, a guy like Jordan Wright could potential a little bit, a guy who's kind of on the fringe. Like, if he works hard enough, if he plays well enough this season, he could have a shot at the NBA. We know Scottie Pippen Jr. We know who he is. He's coming back for a third year. I don't think he needs the NIL. He's going to benefit very well off of this. So I agree with you, Will. I think there's going to be more of a professional feel to these guys. I think it'll help them, but bad, I think these guys might get caught up in a lot of different things like, okay, who do I want to endorse? Who should I work with? Who do I talk to? Like, who's going to be telling these guys, okay, here's who you need to talk to. A lot of these guys don't have agents yet. I'm sure. I mean, Scottie Pippen obviously does, but not everyone's Scottie Pippen. So I think a lot of these players are looking for mentors and they need that mentor. And if they don't, there could be a lot of confused players out there saying, where do I go? I mean, what do I do? Who do I talk to? Things like that. So, Will, that's mine. I think these guys could just get pretty confused and, you know, no. Now, if you're a guy who plays on the bench a lot, you don't have to worry about that. But I think Will, just the confusion factor and, you know, not really knowing what to do or who to talk to, I think is what they may have to worry about.
Yeah, Billy, and we talked about this with Bruno here, but before I get into the stupid, which is what I really want to get into, which is the part that I was talking about earlier when we started off this discussion, talking about how poorly this has been covered, some of the stupid statements from universities, from media members. But I do want to say if you are really opposed to this and you're a college athletics purist and you probably hate the one and done rule and you want guys to stay for 4 years and be a, I think this is the best thing to happen to that could possibly happen. Because right now, especially in basketball, you have guys who are borderline second round picks, probably going to be in the G League at best case, not in front of a lot of eyes, not able to build their brand whatsoever. And they're choosing that option because they have no option to make money and capitalize on their talents and quote unquote cash in at this moment. And Pippen is a good example. He doesn't need the money. He's a bigger brand, but he's who take away the name Scottie Pippen. And I'm using him as an example is when you make that decision, excuse me, but
here we go.
Got to get that cough out. But when he made that decision, it's not all NIL that's making that decision, but he can look at that and say,
why not?
Good grief. But
you got COVID,
man. Maybe so.
I'll just keep going with what
here we go. Here. I found a water, so we're good. So he makes. I'm not saying it played completely into that, but you're deciding I can make $100,000 in the G League, maybe be a second round pick, maybe go undrafted, or I can come back to college, make if you're like a level of a Scottie Pippen player, say I can make $50,000 to $100,000, build my brand, be well known, play in these games that mean a lot. And stay in college. That is another good thing that's going to happen. You'll see a guy staying a year or two longer than they otherwise would. But I've got to get into the stupid here, Billy. Unless you have any, unless you have anything to add here.
No, go. Will, I'm ready. Get your water and let's go.
Here we go. So there was one statement that I read, and I've got to find it here in our notes. I think I copied it in. And I'll start with the quote here. The walls that have kept college athletes from, that's not the right quote. Give me 1 second here while I find it. Here it is.
He's got a lot
I think the players have been exploited, and this is a really complicated issue because you have some sports at some universities that make a tremendous amount of money, and then you have others that lose money. And that was from Andy Hale, an associate professor at the Elon Law School, and he used to be a college athlete himself. I believe he played soccer at Davidson. That is the quote that you're seeing repeatedly from media members, former players, and you're seeing from universities. That is not the case. You would not have made any money with NIL playing soccer at Davidson. And I'm going to go through the numbers here with you. So
maybe playing soccer anywhere.
Yeah, follow along. We're going to have to maybe put up a graphic here to follow along with these numbers. But there
we'll
are four. Yeah, we'll post it here. There are 460,000 NCAA athletes. So that's across Division One, Two, and Three. 460,000.
Damn.
So there are around 9,700 scholarship college football players in Division One. So that is obviously the biggest sport. There are 65 Power Five teams, 85 scholarships between each of those, and there are 5,525 scholarship football players that are playing at major programs with the potential to monetize their name, image, and likeness. And you do have a few extras, Notre Dame, UCF, not part of the Power Five. Basketball players, men's basketball players, can capitalize as well. There are about 4,500 players across 347 Division I college basketball teams, and maybe 100 of those teams you would consider major programs that people well-known, good following, maybe. I'm stretching this on the high side of them benefiting from this, not the low side, so nobody can battle with me on these numbers. So you have maybe 100 of those, around 13 scholarship players on each. So that's around 1,300 college basketball players that are playing at major programs and are going to be able to capitalize and generate actual over $5,000 of revenue annually is what I'm considering significant monetization. Okay. So, and not every single one of those guys that are playing for those programs, they're guys that sit on the end of the bench. So I'm going to say maybe 50%, and that's really, really on the high side.
That's stretching.
50% of these guys are going to be able to actually generate anything significant. So that leaves about 3,400 players of the 460,000 that will actually see tangible monetary benefit from this that will be significant whatsoever, more than just working for 2 or 3 weeks at a summer job.
Yeah.
So out of the 460,000, that percentage is less than 0.7% of college athletes will actually see a really big benefit from this. And I don't think that's understood is this is only going to benefit SEC and other Power Five football players and majorly well-known men's college basketball players. And every once in a while, you will have a guy like Kumar Rocker, or you'll have someone like Brittany Griner or Candace Parker back in the day for Tennessee that to have that ability, or Sarah Fuller.
Yeah,
Would have maybe been the most well-paid athlete of the entire time last season.
Yeah. Yes. She definitely would have benefited. But Will, I will say, you said Power Five football. I think a guy like Carson Wentz, like back when he played.
That's why I said you have to throw in a few more, but pretty generous on that 50%. Of Power Five and major college basketball players.
But I mean, a player like Vanderbilt, like Ken Steeles, I'm not saying but that gives him a chance, you know, down the road if he's able to step up and step into, you know, an NFL draft, you know, room of a certain NFL team. So you never know, Will. And a lot of this stuff is, I agree with you in that a lot of people are overreacting. We touched on this with Bruno Reagan, and nearly 1%, not 1%, but nearly 1% will even generate more than 5,000 of income. It's insane to think about. That's why I think a lot of people are overreacting, and, you know, we will see a difference, but it's not going to be as much of a difference as a lot of people are saying it will be, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, this isn't pay to play. This isn't the universities providing money to these athletes. I mean, this is just basically opening up these stupid restrictions that were illegal for so long. And it was just basically it was just illegal because it's been that way for so long. And somebody finally in that lawsuit in 2014, and it was able to escalate up to the Supreme Court, and they made that final ruling, Kavanaugh releasing that statement that we read on the podcast a few episodes ago, that, okay, you look at that and you say, okay, that's taken too long, but there's not a big downside. And I don't want to say that I went on saying probably around 0.5 to 0.7% of these athletes will see significant benefit. It's a great idea. These guys should be able to do what every other college student should do. And I think you will see better looking athletes. I'm just going to say it in that way. Better looking athletes, male or female, at these smaller schools are going to be able to benefit as well and become social media influencers, generate revenue that way, just like a normal college athlete. And that, I think, is hitting on why this is a good thing and why I'm a fan of it, is these people are 18 years old. It's the most illegal, non-free market, billion-dollar industry, billions of dollars industry that we have in the country. And you sit there and say, finally, these guys have choices. Now, how much those choices are actually going to impact their lives, that's pretty minute, but it's always good to increase those choices, and it moves the NCAA in the right direction, which means the NCAA hopefully doesn't exist in about 15 to 20 years.
Which would be amazing. that would be a lot of people's dream. And like we said, so much is still up in the air with this, and it's really going to be fun to see who are the tier of players that take advantage of it, who are at that second tier that are finding ways to make a decent amount, but, you know, aren't necessarily at the top, and then the players who simply are not able to. So I think that's where we're all at. And especially with Vanderbilt, how do they allow their players and how do they give their players those opportunities to take advantage of that? It should be fun. And it's been a long one, but we still got more to go. We've got Bruno Reagan coming up. He is, he's done a lot. He's played football at Vanderbilt. He played as an O-lineman from 2014 to 2018 under Coach Mason. Played in the XFL. He's hosting an afternoon drive time sports talk radio show right now. So we dive into all the NIL with Bruno, and it's always fun. Well,
yeah, it also is listed when you search Bruno Reagan online, by the way, Billy. He is a multiple time national and international champion in judo. So I don't leave that off of his bio. That's pretty. Yeah. Don't leave that one off. Exactly. So don't mess with Bruno. If you're going to mess with him before, he's already 6'3", like 300, 315. I wouldn't have messed with him anyway, but definitely don't mess with Bruno. Just add insult to injury if you say the wrong thing to him.
Yeah, so that's why if you wrestle him, he will probably dominate you. And we've got Bruno Reagan coming up. He's the host of the Afternoon Stretch, also contributor to VandySports.com. Bruno Reagan coming right up here on the Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Before we get to the interview with Bruno Reagan from 560 WNSR, it's now time to send it over to Gary Scales for a few words on our presenting sponsor, Alaco Fine Wood Floors.
No matter what style you're going for, you can trust your flooring job to Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Take a walk through the woods in your home every day. Get your flooring job started today by calling 615-356-0303. Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Craftsmanship you can stand on.
Welcome back into the Door Report. I am Billy Derrick alongside Will Byram, and we are now happy to be joined by our special guest on today's episode, Bruno Reagan. He was a Vanderbilt offensive lineman. I'm sure many of you remember the name. We've had him on before, friend of the podcast now, because this is the second time on, from 2014 to 2018 under Coach Mason. He's also a former St. Louis Battlehawk of the XFL, and he's now working on the airwaves here in Nashville, the Afternoon Stretch, along with Zach Williams, Monday through Friday on 560 WNSR here in Nashville. And he's also a contributor for VandySports.com. So the Nashville sports radio scene is keeping him busy as well as online. Bruno, the Afternoon Stretch, huh? How's it going?
Yeah, it's good. It's like the easiest job on the planet. Radio is by far the easiest job on the planet. So I can't complain. I work between that, the gym I got, I'm trying to like find more ways to work throughout the week. I get bored. Yeah. So I usually train myself, but trying to just, you know, expand out the career. I'm still young. I don't got to fast forward too far.
Yeah, you got plenty of time. Well, Bruno, let's go ahead and start with the NIL. You know, I'm sure, you know, you and Zach have been talking about that a lot on your show, and all of us have. It seems like the talk of college sports right now. What is your stance on it? And we've talked to old people, we've talked to younger people, and it seems like the opinions are all over the place. Do you think it's good or bad for college sports, or is that too broad of a question?
No, I mean, I'll answer it in the most fundamental way. I think how it is right now is the way I like it the most. Now, you can ask me in a year or two, whatever. I'm sure my opinion will change as I observe more things. But in my head, the fact that it's basically an open and free market, like anything else on this planet. Now, it's heavily unregulated right now, so it could get kooky. We could see, you know, Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State, you know, promote a altcoin and then pump and dump. Like, who, you know, the possibilities are endless. But this way right now, where it's so chaotic, there's a lot to go around. I like it this way. I think kids are going to learn valuable lessons a lot faster. This is the way I prefer it. As I see it, this is the way.
Yeah. And something that I like that Tennessee signed into law, and I believe Florida did and a few other states, was they're requiring financial literacy programs for the athletes in their first semester on campus. Cause that's my first major thing is,
they're not going to pay taxes.
I consider myself pretty financially literate, but even at 18 going into college, I didn't have exactly, you know, and this is not going to be the average NCAA athlete or even the average SEC football player, but there are going to be some guys that step on that campus and they're immediately going to be rained down with these offers, and they're going to have money they don't know how to manage. So that was something I liked that they implemented. But Bruno, I'm kind of curious. Me and Billy, of course, have never been recruited to play college athletics, clearly, if you want to take a look and wonder why. Yeah, but
go ahead and take a look.
So you've actually been through that process. You've seen the other side. How much do you think this is actually going to impact, first, that recruiting process, and secondly, how much of an impact as far as on the field do you think it will have?
I just think it brings things to the forefront. I mean, it's going to be transparent now. I think this stuff has been going on at the top level for forever. At the top level of anything, there's always a – you know, cheating is, I guess, a hard word to swallow, but people don't, like, for example, PEDs. People don't take PEDs at the semi-pro or the call, like, what's it called when colleges play, like, just the students are playing something? Intramurals. Like, that's not who's taking PEDs. The best of the best of the best are taking them because of the anxiety to perform and all of that. The same cheating is going on in college recruiting all the time. And you hear stories about it, especially from the inside, all the time. It's just common knowledge. I mean, let's look at Louisville basketball. The whole program got busted open back in I think it was like 3 to 4 years ago. You know, one of the top basketball programs. I mean, just totally busted open on everything. They're all doing it. And this is just going to be a legal way of doing it. It's nothing's changed. Like, nothing's really changed in the process. Nothing has changed at all. It's all the same.
I think that's what a lot of people are overreacting to. Like, it's not going to be totally different. You know, it's going to be slightly different with certain things that go on and what players are allowed to do. But I think there's a lot of people out there on Twitter and TV, whatever, they think it's going to change college, the landscape of college football, at basketball, whatever. Obviously, those are the two major ones forever. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be more people scared to make these sort of deals than there are people, you know, because who knows if they get injured, are they not going to be making that money anymore? Because who knows? I think people are going to be more hesitant than they are aggressive. Now, you know, who knows what's going to go on with players like, you know, who's the quarterback at Oklahoma, Spencer Rattler. I know he got one, a deal, you know, with Raising Cane's Chicken. I mean, there's no telling how much money is going to be flown into his pocket. So Bruno, like, I think a lot of people are overreacting. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, especially from my whole thing is, it's like, oh, well, only the top 0.1% are going to make money. Good. They earned it. I think they earned it. I like, what kind of logic is that you should, these kids should go to college for free. If I'm not going to swear on your podcast out of respect for you guys, it gets me so.
We have done it before.
Yeah, it gets me very upset when people will tell these kids are getting paid in their education. You can't eat on an education. People are looking like, because my teammates came from, I came from when I was born, my parents were on a lower class background, and you know, they were able to climb a social class, and I was really well off growing up, really well off. A lot of my teammates weren't, and there were some guys who should have been making money that weren't. I think that's ridiculous. There are some guys who at the top level of college, they make it under the table, thankfully, but this is just a way so none of them get dropped. I mean, it's already been happening. Everyone just kind of sees it.
Yeah.
What I keep saying is it's the most simultaneously undercovered and undercared about story while also being the most over-exaggerated and overhyped up thing. As far as for us that are really big fans of the process and recruiting and getting these guys in and where they're going, we're going to notice that portion. For the average fan that turns on the TV or turns on the national championship, the same teams are going to be there. And the point I keep hitting on is you have that side, which is this only affects 0.1% of the athletes. And then you get to the other side of it, which is this is going to ruin the dichotomy of college athletics and the equity of competition. And I'm like, do you really think right now Akron football and Central Michigan football are recruiting for the same guys, that those guys are sitting there with two hats in front of them between Alabama and Clemson and Akron and Central Michigan? It's not the same guys without this. So it's just going to be the best players go to the best schools with the biggest followings and biggest audience. And the middle-level players go to the mid-major programs and then so on and so forth. And that process isn't going to change. So that's kind of what you were hitting on, is it's already happening. It's already happening under the table. And then it's not going to impact the actual on the field. But I do think you're going to have some interesting storylines come out, like the Miami play, like Miami players being offered by Don Lambert $6,000 each, basically, if you commit to Auburn and are on scholarship.
That's so. Miami. I mean, that's already been happening.
I don't know. I don't know why Dan Lambert is like. What does that have to do with mixed martial arts or his brand? Or I don't get his deal. If I ever see him, I'll ask him and be like, "Dude, what are you talking about?" Maybe he just really loves the University of Miami. But I don't know how a mixed martial arts place can make enough money to just basically stipend a college football team.
And that'll be interesting, because I know they have to file, and you may have more info on this than I do, but I know they have to file at the end of the year with the NCAA to review the revenue they generated from NIL. And that's going to be interesting, that first year of review, because how do you differentiate from a legitimate endorsement from, let's say, mixed martial arts studio versus somebody that is a big fan of the team and is like, I don't really give a, you know, if I make any money, real money off these endorsements, but I would have paid this to see a good product on the field either way. So that'll be interesting. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that side of how much of that kind of stuff we're going to see.
On the actual on-field stuff, I have very little opinion. The game isn't going to change. We're not going to change watching it. It's all going to be the same, man. I think it's just some adults just didn't like seeing the success of, or at least I say adults, people on Twitter just didn't like, they don't like the idea of someone at 18 years old being wildly successful. I think they're like, nah, you got to wait 4 years until you, and whatever you think about that, man, go ahead. But I think the earlier you learn your lessons, honestly, the better. That's at least how I've done it in my whole deal. And
I'm with you, man. I mean, Twitter is kind of, I don't think that's the place to go to.
Twitter is the number one stomping ground of intellectual discourse on our planet. All right. I love Twitter. I love Twitter, but I treat it as a joke, man.
Twitter is my favorite social media, while I also despise it every time I get on there, but I keep coming back.
Yep. Well, Bruno, let's go ahead and dive into Vandy. I don't think we've touched on them at all. This is a Vanderbilt podcast. Obviously, Scottie Pippen Jr. has decided to come back to school. How much now, initially, Will and I were kind of surprised, and as were a lot of other people, because we were not anticipating that. But I think we can both agree that NIL played quite a bit into his decision. Just natural human instinct can look at that and say, hey, Scottie's probably going to make a lot more money coming back to college off of his brand image and likeness rather than signing a smaller deal with a G League school. So how much do you think the NIL and everything, those possibilities with him in Nashville played into him coming back?
Yeah, I guarantee you played it. He actually did play. This is one of the cases where actually did play a little bit of a part, because I mean, he probably would have had his shot in the NBA. The main point reason he's coming back is he probably didn't get the prospect he wanted, you know, that warranted leaving early. But this is just kind of icing on the cake, because as soon as NIL was announced, I saw him. It was before, I guess, he recommitted to come back. I saw him just post that blanket statement on social media. Everyone else is like, oh, name image likeness change. All college athletes across the planet were just copying and pasting that on their Instagram. Not a very good sales tactic, but if you go to Vanderbilt, we had a lot of financial classes even back when we weren't doing any of that stuff. So hopefully he goes to them and learns how to get into a more selling and advertising, market his brand basically. But it's going to be good for him, man. And it's going to be good for, I mean, having him back is going to be huge for the program. I have been a kind of a Stackhouse ever since the stuff came where he was DMing fans. I was like, nah, this guy, there's no way this guy can be trusted to run the program. But he's gotten some recruits, he's got some ball players, and then we might have a sneaky squad this year, so we'll see.
Yeah. And Bruno, kind of curious here, how much do you think this could help with the purists that really hate this, what is happening with the name, image, and likeness? But I think it might return back to seeing guys stay longer in college because they don't feel that need to cash in necessarily at the next level in a non-ideal situation, Scottie Pippen being the perfect example. Do you think this will have any impact on the NFL and NBA's really, really stupid rules requiring a certain amount of years out of high school, removed from high school, before being eligible for their draft?
I think for basketball, they shouldn't have a rule limit. I think, and this is probably just from a personal opinion, I do think the 3 years in college for football is mandatory. The NFL is just an entirely different game. There's no development you can really do to it. If there was an XFL and you could go just if there was an XFL, like a true XFL that was stable, I would advocate for that. But there's no high schooler on this planet aside from, I mean, not even guys like Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, the generational talents. They couldn't have gone out of high school and competed at the NFL level. It is just too physical of a game. So I do think I think this will help supplement those 3 years people need to stay in college, maybe one or two if they need to change that around. But
I was really hoping it would, just because of an example that I always use is Marcus Lattimore blowing out his knee against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And that guy, if he was allowed to come out, would have come out in the draft in the previous year. He was ready to be a top 3-4 round pick and would have. And football being such a contact intense sport, I don't think there will be any high school kids coming out of high school ready to play in the NFL. I don't think you'll see that. It's not like basketball or baseball. It's way too physical. These are grown men compared to kids in a physical sport. But I think there are a lot of scenarios where you can see a guy that's a sophomore or he's coming off of a freshman year and he doesn't want to take that risk of what happened to Marcus Lattimore in that Tennessee game back in 2012. So that's what I'm hoping might come out of this. Just what you're seeing kind of the trend toward is these athletes having more choices. And I think that is what is the nitty gritty of it, is I think they should be able to decide what they do as far as generating out of endorsements, generating going pro to the next level. And that's the path we're kind of shifting towards. And I think people that have issues with that, I don't see why they have issues with that. And it's one of those things I have trouble seeing from their side and their perspective.
Well, it's going to give players a reason to play the college game. I mean, we saw it eventually where people were calling out of their people from top, like top prospects would call out of their low tier bowl games. And then top prospect were calling out of their top tier bowl games. And then some prospects were just not playing the biggest games of the year, by far the New Year's Sixes. Some prospects, I think Bosa was one of them, would get hurt and just say, nah, I'm not gonna, I'm just going to train by myself for a year and a half and then go to the NFL. I'm that good. So it was getting trivialized. If you're a purist at that point, you just have your head in the dirt. I mean, you're just not really paying attention to what's going on. This is going to at least give young men the chance to earn and legitimize being out there. Because Marcus Lattimore is an exceptional point. He knew he had value right then and there. He didn't have to play in that game. It probably felt silly playing in that game, especially it's hard for me. And I hate to bring this into it too. It's hard for me to see people telling young African-American men their morals in how to treat their brand and their business. because they were essentially trying to shame these guys. Like, it doesn't apply to Christian McCaffrey. I mean, tons of people were trying to shame him, but he knew he was going to be a millionaire. There's a ton of people out there that this could be life-changing money.
And
it's always been ridiculous to me to tell people how they should and should not treat business. Business in America is extremely ruthless. It is extremely unforgiving. Nobody cares. You are in a CYA scenario. You are trying to cover your own ass at all costs. There is no trust outside of things of writing. I always tell people all the time, if there's something valuable to you, you get it in writing all the time. You know, never go into business with your best friends. They're not, it's like moving in with your best friends. I lost half of my best friends moving in with each other. Same thing with business. I mean, so this is just a way that they can incorporate business into their football, and that they don't have to make that choice or face that pressure from the university or anything like that. These young men are going to have opportunity. I'm on your camp where it's really hard to see the downside of all of this.
Yeah, Bruno, I want to go back here, though, quick to what you were talking about with, you know, some of these players, maybe like Scottie Pippen Jr., for example, going back to class and what class is he taking is going to be really interesting. Looking at his list, I would imagine he's got to be done with a lot of the core classes third year coming back to Vanderbilt. So now I'd love to see what classes he's taking. And going a little bit deeper, what advice would you give to a student athlete like Scottie Pippen or other student athletes at a school like Vanderbilt, not in general, not a broad scope of everything, but at Vanderbilt in particular, in regards to how they can benefit most from these possibilities while also, you know, being responsible with it and not going too far with this NIL?
That's interesting because I've never been in Scotty's position. When you tell me to give a guy like that advice, that guy is, you know, by far he has more value right now than I ever had in my whole career. But from that perspective, if I ever had to tell him something, I'd be like, man, you got to start thinking about the money now. Whenever I talk to pro athletes, or at least talk about the way we spend money, I'm always like, don't spend your money on the nice stuff first. Spend your money on the financial security. By far, like Scotty, if you get like, who knows what he can make, maybe he makes like at the lowest, like let's say something like 80,000 this year. Imagine he could start building safety nets with that, right? Like if he was able to report, then when you get to the NBA, you know, maybe that's a down payment on a house. You rent that out. Scotty, now you have something secure. You own property. It's an appreciating. Now you can go buy the Lambo, right? Now you can go buy the nice car. You know, I get it. You want to buy the nice stuff. But every time dudes get into a lot of money, me included, when those checks roll in, you want to buy the nice stuff. So if you have the opportunity to earn money now in college, put it towards the boring stuff that's going to secure you later in life. Then when you make it big in the NBA, Scotty, go crazy. Have fun.
Love it. Love it. And I think we're going to try to send that to Scottie Pippen. I think
he's going to be like, who's this fat Hispanic kid? Why is he giving me advice?
Oh, man. He's probably fine. He's probably fine right now. But Bruno, we're running out of time here. I want to close it out with not necessarily something on NIL, but we got SEC Media Days coming up this week. Vanderbilt obviously will be there Wednesday. Bradley Ashmore and Davion Davis will join Coach Lee. And obviously it got started today, which is kind of a jolt of energy. Like, whoa, college football season is here. And you know, we're what, 4.5-5 weeks away, I think, from the start of it. So it's pretty crazy. But Bruno, on Vanderbilt, obviously no wins last year, but what's kind of the threshold? What's a realistic threshold for this team this year? I know we're still pretty far out. We're not even at fall camp yet, but as we head into SEC Media Days, what are you looking at with this team?
I just right off the bat, I'll get it out of the way. 3 to 4 wins, I think, would be a solid season for these guys coming off an absolutely abysmal winless season. If these guys go to a bowl game, unironically, Clark Lee might be in the running for coach of the SEC coach of the year, unironically.
Yep.
Depending on how a team, I could see a team like Kentucky winning the East and then you have to give it to Stoops, but Clark, depending on how the rest of the SEC plays out, if it plays out perfectly and Clark Lee just grabs 6 wins and who knows, even wins the bowl, that would be amazing. I do think this, if this team was able to almost touched some SEC teams last season. I think we saw Mississippi State as a close game. This, you know, some of them were abysmal, like South Carolina. You got to turn off after a quarter. I think 3 to 4 wins, you know, try to win those OOCs, especially no losing the UNLV in front of 3,000 people. You have to win those games. Those are must wins. That's important for the momentum of the program. But this is one of those years where for Vandy fans, we're going to essentially give them a pass on success.
Yes.
What's important is 3 to 4 wins. And then next season, 5 to 6, and then maybe repeat a bowl game again after that. Then we can start talking about the East. There is no program in the SEC or PAC that can come from the bottom and immediately just shoot up in 1 year. It's not possible. You have to build towards it. So I hope Vandy fans are willing to sit, try and take the good out of this 3 and 4 season. If we can get there, you know, for all we know, it could be another 0-win season. I don't think it's going to be though. I think he's the guy.
Yeah. A lot of people would agree with you. And, you know, he's doesn't have numbers on his players' jerseys yet, but you know,
and it's a big problem for everybody.
Yeah. I didn't know that would be such a big issue.
Everybody has such a problem with it.
Chad Morris did it.
Arkansas was bad. Therefore, that's why Clark Lee did it. Therefore, Clark Lee will be bad. Amazing argument. I love
it. I think you liked my tweet earlier that was about that. That I said that was the problem. That's why things didn't work out with Chad Morris in Arkansas.
Anybody who calls out media members saying absolutely stupid things, it gets A-plus in my book.
It's the best, and that's what we're here for. It's SEC Media Day's time. We'll probably hear a lot more from that, and it's going to be interesting to see when they do get their jersey.
Yeah, they're going to ask Clark all about it, I guess. It's going to be all Vanderbilt's asked about is the numbers.
Clark's going to have a deep philosophical answer for it, and I can't wait.
I'll give it this. Clark is amazing at coach speak, so he's not going to give them a single answer.
No. I'll guarantee you he will be the longest appearance at the podium because of the way he is. Well, Bruno, thanks again, and you know, good luck with your show here locally, also obviously with VandySports.com, and we'll get you back on during football season. Thanks, man.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, guys.
Well, that does it for episode 95 of The Door Report. Big thanks to our special guest today, Bruno Reagan, the afternoon drive time radio host on the afternoon stretch from 4 to 6 p.m. Tune in to him along with Zach Williams every weekday afternoon on your drive home on 560 WNSR. For myself, Billy Derrick, Bruno Reagan, and Will Byram, you've been listening to episode 95 of The Door Report, powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors.